I'm going to call to order a regular meeting of the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, December 3rd, 2005. And would you all please rise with us and have a moment of silence for our brave men and women who are serving this country every day and giving the ultimate sacrifice? He can help people, save them from danger, and stop criminals from robbing banks. Nice job. A lofty goal, Luis. He enjoys playing Nintendo, watching television at home, playing with toys, and going to the store with his family. He is accompanied this evening. Is Principal Storm here?
No, she's not.
It looks like, are you dad?
Yes.
He's by his dad, and then Miss Alma was now. So, Luis, don't lead us.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Luis. Come here, let me give you something. This is a certificate for leading us in faith. Thank you so much. Can I take a picture? If you hold that and look at those two.
Thank you. You
want
to
shake everyone's hand?
His hands are too full.
They got
two.
Thanks, Luis. Appreciate you being here.
Okay, Donna, when you're ready, roll call.
Here.
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 Here. Thank you, Donna. City Attorney, can you cover our closed session announcements tonight?
Certainly. Honorable Mayor, Council Members, on Monday, November 21st, 2011, after meeting in closed session on one item, and that was negotiations with various labor groups, the City Council reconvened to open session and announced there were no reportable actions taken.
Great, thank you. And this is a point where the Council will review the order of the agenda as presented by staff and see if we want to make any changes to the agenda. Do any members want to change the order of the agenda this evening?
No.
Okay. One thing that I am opposed, none, motion carries. So let's move on to, we have nothing on our ceremonial calendar this evening. Public communications. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item within the interest of this council. The item must not be on our agenda, because when the agenda item comes, I will give you ample opportunity to address the council at that time. So the council will listen to all comments, and we cannot take any action. So is there someone that would like to address the council tonight on the public communications?
Honorable Mayor and City Council Members, Leah Greeley, Parks and Rec Commissioner. I just wanted to remind you again that the Holiday of Lights contest is coming up. The preliminary judging deadline is going to be December 10th and 11th, 5:30 to 9 p.m. The deadline to submit any nominations for your neighbors or yourself or anyone is the Monday, December 12th. And then the final judging is going to be Saturday, December 17th, 5:30 to 9 p.m. Any questions?
Any questions?
Good.
Thank you. Anyone else that would like to address the council during public communication this evening? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close public communications. And we're going to go into our first public hearing item this evening. And this is a resolution elected to be subject to the California Public Employees Medical and Hospital Care Act. City Manager.
Actually, I'll ask
Gala to present the report.
Ms. Chapman.
Honorable Mayor and City Council, Gala Chapman, Administrative Services Director. Before you tonight, there are four resolutions for the City Council to consider electing the city to be subject to the California Public Employees Medical and Hospital Care Act. During the fiscal year 12 budget process, the city successfully negotiated with all bargaining units a reopener to discuss participation in the PERS medical insurance plan. Staff began negotiations with various bargaining units in September and concluded these negotiations. The savings to the city would be approximately $180,000 on an annual basis, or $80,000 for fiscal year 12. CalPERS has successfully provided health benefits for over 45 years and is the largest health provider in California and the second largest in the nation after the federal government. The CalPERS health program is considered to be a national model of successful group health care and continuously strive and offer two methods. Staff is recommending the unequal method, which allows the employer to initially contribute a lesser amount towards health coverage for the retirees than the amount contributed for active employees. The city maximum contribution rates for dependent coverage will continue as listed in the memorandums of understanding and agreements with the employee groups. The coverage for the employee only will be listed at the per select PPO rate of $446.68. Staff recommends that the City Council open the public hearing, take testimony, and then adopt the resolutions electing to be subject to the Public Employees Medical and Hospital Care Act for all four employee groups.
That's your staff, concludes your staff report?
That concludes the staff report.
Okay, any questions of staff?
Actually, I do. Is there an enrollment fee, a one-time for each employee?
No.
Okay, thank you.
And Gayla, I don't think I heard you, but can you talk about the fiscal impact that you've identified associated with what's being recommended to the council?
The amount that we should save on an annualized basis based on the fiscal year or calendar year 12 rates for the PERS health care is $160,000. So for fiscal year 12, we would save approximately $80,000.
Very good. Thank you. This is a public hearing item, so I'm going to open this up to the public. I don't have any speaker request form. Is there anyone that would like to address this particular item before the council tonight? Seeing none, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the council. If there's no additional discussion, is someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
Well, I would make a motion that we
Honorable Mayor, Council Members, I apologize for interrupting. It would be my recommendation that we take these one at a time.
Oh, okay.
All righty then. So then, I would make a motion that we adopt the resolution electing. I don't know how am I going to do this? How do I identify?
The first one listed is executive management.
Okay. Yeah.
So then, the first one, Medical and Hospital Care Act for executive management.
I'll second that.
Okay. There's a motion. There's a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Then I'll continue on that we, I move that we approve the resolution electing the Public Employees Medical and Hospital Care Act for management and confidential employees.
I'll second that one.
Okay, there's a motion and a second.
Yes.
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 And then that we approve the resolution for the Grover Beach Police Officers Association.
I'll second that one, too.
Okay, there's a motion, there's a second. No additional discussion. Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Council.
Motion carries on all four resolutions. Let's move on to our consent agenda. This is an agenda where we typically we'll take routine items as a group, and tonight we have, looks like, just one item on consent, and this is the Treasury Report for the period of November 17th through the 28th, 2011. Does anyone on the council want to pull the item or any discussion on this item? Okay.
I move that we accept the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
Okay, very good. There's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. So at this point, I'm going to recess the regular meeting, and then I am going to call to order the joint meeting of the City Council and Improvement Agency. So, Donna, when you are ready.
Here.
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 Here. Thank you, Donna. Public communications, does any member of the public want to address the Joint City Council Improvement Agency on any item within the jurisdiction of either body that's not on the agenda?
Good evening. This actually does not have to do with the improvement. I missed my segment at the very beginning. I'm actually just wanting to announce to everyone, as well as the general public here, including obviously the City Council of Grover Beach, about a House resolution bill that is out. It's HRES 242, and it's to help recognize May as National Foster Care Month. This House resolution bill does not have the power of a law, but it is just a resolution bill that goes through the House of Ways and Means, and it's currently just sitting there. And I would strongly encourage everyone to support it by going to bill as recognizing May as National Foster Care Month would just really be recognizing the successes of foster care, as well as the struggles that are still in the foster care system. Currently, I got this information from one of the sources here in our community, the Family Care Network. I found out that there was approximately 300 children and youth currently in the foster care system of our community here in Solo County. So again, just this bill would just be recognizing the successes as well as the struggles, giving recognition to all the foster parents, mentors, volunteers, and other people that put in their time and effort into this. So I hope to encourage people to support it. Thank you very much.
And also, thank you for coming up. My apologies for missing your slip earlier.
Oh, no, it's okay. Thank you.
May I ask
thank
a question?
You. Yes.
What is the bill number again, please?
It's HRES 242.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Was there anyone else that would like to address the City Council Improvement Agency during public communications? Mm-hmm. Seeing that, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the council. And at this point, I'm going to pull item CCIA2 up, and this is a fiscal year 12 first quarter fiscal review. City manager, can you kind of go over that? And also, I think it's important that people understand some of the things that the council has done in trying to address the issue of budget and trying to be fiscally responsible. So,
Mr. Mayor, Chair, and members of the City Council and board members, the purpose of this report is to provide the council with a review of the chiefly of the city's fiscal activities through the first quarter. Normally, this report is pretty straightforward and is recommended. It's a receipt and file report. But this year, it probably denotes a little bit more attention because of the difficulty that we have with the general fund. And what I'd like to do is go through the report, talk about the general fund, and then deal with the fund. The fund receives, I think it's important to note that it receives the majority of its revenue really from two locations. 50% of the general fund revenues are from property tax, and another 18% are from sales and use tax. The rest is made up from a variety of different sources, and they include everything from the transient, well, that's a tax, from vehicle license fees, fees for services, and grants and loans that we receive from other agencies. This year, the adopted budget reflects a shortfall that revenues were projected at $6,787,973, and expenditures are estimated in the budget at $7,250,512. It should be noted that the council has taken steps to try and mitigate that shortfall, and I'll be going over those very shortly in more detail. But most recently, part of that has been the $310,000 that was achieved through employee concessions and a reduction in the contribution to the street program. I should say that before I get into the detail on the first quarter report, that the first quarter is sometimes the most difficult report quarter to analyze, largely because your chief revenue contributions don't come in until December. Again, the property tax, we don't receive those receipts until December. And conversely, a lot of our expenditures are really up front, things like insurance payments for workers' comp and liability insurance all come due. Those premiums come due in the first quarter. So it is a bit more difficult to try and analyze and provide projections, but we do it by looking at a number of factors, including the local economy, the latest report, sales tax reports that we've received on a quarterly basis, and attempting to look back at history and determine when revenues show up and what percentage that is of the entire budget. At this point, we are still noting that our revenues are trending downward. I've noted a very conservative approach in estimating our property tax to come in just about at what we had estimated in the budget. Conversely, property tax for prior years, these are normally your delinquencies. Based on the historical trend that we've seen thus far, we would think that they look like they'll be below budget estimates by about $15,000. Utility users tax is expected to be also down about $17,000. Franchise fees are projected to be slightly up at about $10,000. Sales tax revenues are very difficult to analyze for a couple of reasons. First, sales tax we receive in arrears from the state, and actually the state has been dragging even more so in getting those funds to us, so it makes it difficult to come up with a final year-end projection. The other is we have seen some conflicting information. We make our budget projections based on what we see during the fiscal year. Lately, if those of you may have attended the economic forecast, actually saw that there was a positive second quarter in 2011 as compared to 2010. But I want to point out that that's a calendar quarter and not the fiscal year. So it's a bit difficult to actually make those projections until we get a little bit further into the budget year. But for the time being, we're estimating that the sales tax will be down $25,000. That's our general sales tax revenue. And then we have the special sales tax that's associated with a half-cent sales tax. And that seems to be lagging a little bit further behind. Again, this is on the fiscal year, not on the calendar year. Vehicle code fines for the county are looking as if they're coming in about $15,000 lower than budgeted. This is largely not because it has anything to do with the number of tickets that we're issuing, but it's more or less what's happening at the county level in terms of collections and distributions back to the local level. I should say the transient occupancy tax that we will be down a little by about $12,000. A special event fund was established as a separate fund to assist with tracking expenditures to encourage self-sustainability. I should report that some of our events are certainly doing better this year, and we're pleased about that, although in the previous 2 years we actually saw that the general fund was required to subsidize the special events fund up to a total of $32,000. We'll watch that, continue to watch that very closely as we go through the year. Like I said, some were much better than others, some events. I think the summer concert series was in much better shape than it's been in the past. To summarize with the general fund summary, first of all, in terms of the FY12 indicated, but when we first presented this budget to you, we were looking at an $800,000 shortfall, if you'll recall. Staff and the council worked very hard to mitigate the deficit, and again, as I've mentioned, that was through employee concessions of $310,000 that we negotiated. Again, reducing the general fund contribution for the streets by $120,000, use of reserve funds for $200,000, and we're just hearing tonight about the conversion of the employee health program. Preliminary indications are that revenues still are trending downward, and you know, we're still anticipating a deficit of about $200,000 in the general fund. It is important to recall that the sale of property remains a budgeted revenue, and it was pegged in the budget at $250,000. And I should point out that that revenue line item is nonspecific. It could be related to any series of properties. That's what the budget expects it to receive. Any deviation from that will, however, add to the deficit. I'd like to pause for a moment and ask Gayla to bring up a sheet that I prepared. I just wanted, and I'll ask if the city clerk could pass this out to the council, just wanted to briefly go over a little bit of history in terms of what we've been dealing with over the last couple of years. So you understand, essentially, we've lost 8 staff members during that period. Initially, and that's included a recreation coordinator, maintenance worker, two maintenance worker twos, a number of police staffing, including a senior officer, corporal in 2009, a police officer in April of 2010, another police officer in November of 10, and then also a planning manager in November of 08, and the economic development specialist in 2010. That occurred when we combined the position with the plant community development director. Essentially, most of these positions that you see here were largely funded, not entirely, but largely funded by the general fund. In addition to that, the council's authorized the implementation of an early retirement program, and it's resulted in the elimination of two positions, the records property supervisor position in the police department, which was noted also above, or wasn't noted above, was actually occurred in December of 09, and we actually have another early retirement that is pending with the city mechanic. I've already alluded to employee concessions. Those concessions amounted to, in actually FY 10 and 11, $185,000. That was, by and large, for the implementation of the furlough program. And then that was followed with the increase of the furlough program, along with other concessions, I might add. It wasn't the furlough program alone that got us to the $310,000. But there was also some benefit concessions that also occurred that helped yield that number. We've already talked about the conversion of the health program that you've just authorized. Should make a note that $166,000 is organization-wide, so that's across all funds. It's impact or benefit to the general fund will be obviously substantially less than this, and that's an annual figure, 166,000 organization-wide. The reduction, and the other one I wanted to note was overall reduction in general fund contribution to capital. Important looking back at it to talk a little bit about the revenue augmentation in and it's important to go all the way back to 2006. The reason I want to mention that is revenue augmentation is not easy for us, largely because most of our budget revenue sources are constrained by state law. You're unable to move forward without a vote of the general public. But we did that in 2006. And we're successful with a half-cent percent sales tax adjustment. And that's been yielding between $400,000 and $480,000 on an annual basis. And we're very lucky to have that because, obviously, if we didn't, the issues that we're facing today would be significantly more difficult. In terms of also revenue augmentation, we have participated with the agency in the sale of affordable city property for affordable housing. We basically have sold a couple of different properties. One is currently under development, and hopefully we'll see the next one sometime next year. And we have used reserve funds extensively. There was $376,000 worth of carryover in that would have gone into the reserve funds, but we chose to use those for budget expenditures in 09 and 10. And we're looking at $20,000, or it should say $200,000 for a budgeted use of reserves in FY 11 and 12. Looking long-term, it doesn't mean, as you'll note from the top, I think we've made a lot of progress. Our revenues, unfortunately, are down by a 17%, and with all the work we've done thus far, our expenditures are down just about 10%. We still have, obviously, a ways to go. Looking long term, as we've heard, and I don't think anybody has any crystal ball, but most folks think that we're into this for the long term. And consequently, it is staff's opinion that we still need to get the years go and is producing about $75,000 in revenue if we were to change that from a essentially a fee-based program to a gross revenue-based program, gross receipts-based program, we probably doubled the revenue from $75,000 to $80,000. Another area that we're looking at is consolidation of some of the services that we're providing here in City Hall right now. We're operating four public counters. We are working on a plan that we hope to present to you next month on consolidating those. And we're in the process of analyzing what kinds of reductions we might be able to expect from that. Obviously, staff will continue to keep the council updated on the general fund through status reports such as this one. You know, what I'm going to do before I go into the water fund is essentially stop and answer any questions you might have particular to the general fund.
Okay, very good. Any questions of Mr. Perrault? Yes, Councilmember Peterson.
The couple of questions. One is you mentioned that it looks as if, or we agreed to reduce the reserves this year, 200,000. Can you tell me what the reserves amount is?
Well, we had started at, and Gayla's going to be able to provide me verification of this, but it was slightly over $2 million, and we will be down to about $1.6
million. Okay. And then also, you mentioned that I'm aware that we've been reviewing the properties that we own for affordable housing for, I think, since 2007, almost 4 years now.
Actually, the concept has been in place since 2007.
Okay.
What we did is we actually took a piece of property that the agency owned and provided that to Habitat for Humanity at a cost of about $400,000. That ended up, in that case, producing four single-family homes. The next step was the 10th and Farrell property, which is under contract to Vernon Construction. They will be bringing in their plan. Still has to go through the planning process.
Multiple right. times over the last 4 to 5 years. And then, now this is, in your opinion, are there any more properties that we could look at selling for that purpose?
There may be, but they're very constrained. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one of the items on the agenda that we'll need to talk about. We will be continuing to narrow that list down, we've been reviewing it with the council on an ongoing basis and taking subsequent direction. Most of the property other than municipal buildings, I don't think are at a point of wanting to sell municipal buildings. But a lot of what we have left is either open space, parks, or retention basins that have some kind of constraints associated with them.
So it looks like we've probably reached the end of the road in terms of finding viable city properties that can be sold for affordable
housing.
We
may have others, but it's going to be fairly small.
Yeah, not viable, perhaps. Sure. Okay. And then I know that this looks to me like a pretty comprehensive plan to reduce expenses and increase revenues over the long term. I'm wondering if you could just give us a little description of how you work together with city management to do that. You meet department heads. How have you come up with all these, all the reductions that you have so far?
It's been an ongoing process mm-hmm. on an annual basis. It starts with the staff level, and a lot of these programs are initially vetted there, and then they're all brought to the council for final direction. The freeze was something that staff recommended and the council endorsed early on back in 2008-2009. Concessions have been difficult to achieve from the employees. I think they've come to the table, but when you're taking dollars and benefits away from individuals, it's never entirely easy on both sides. But we've been fortunate enough to be able to negotiate successful concession packages. I know this is going to sound a little bit like I'm very thankful of what they've done, but I think it's important to point out that we achieved concessions here, employee concessions, long before some difficult times. I should note, too, that this list is not all comprehensive. There have been other reductions that I didn't list here. For instance, most of the training has basically across the board for the staff been gutted, with the exception of those training programs that are reimbursed by the state level. Occasionally, a conference will come up that is just considered to be too valuable to miss, and we've authorized travel for those, but that seems to be the exception more than the rule.
Any other questions? Councilmember Bright.
Thank you, Bob. First of all, I want to say that I do appreciate all that has been done, all the work you've done. I mean, it's made a huge difference. But my question is regarding the sale of the property. It says it remains a budgeted revenue figure at approximately $250,000.
Right. And the question is, that's what it is?
Yeah. The question is, is that a real value? Is that a real figure?
Well, it depends on the completion of the process of selling property. And as I've said, it's this property. It may be another piece of property. It could be a combination of things. Ultimately, it was, as with all budget estimates, what we came up, we estimated at the time that the budget is put together. Obviously, as you progress through the year, you end up with different kind, you know, reality fine-tunes what your budget estimates are. So, you know, ultimately, the outcome of this will depend on the sale of property, what that value is listed at, and how quickly and when that occurs.
Okay, so then we could still be looking at a...
You could, okay. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any questions?
I do.
Okay, Councilman Warner.
On the employee concessions of $310,000, mm-hmm. that does not include the recent medical.
No.
Mm-mm. So I was subtracting here. So we start out with $800,000, right?
Right.
And you're saying so then we subtract the $310,000, correct?
Right.
And then we subtract the $120,000.
Right.
And then
it may or may not be $200,000 by the time we get to the end of the year.
Okay. And the $800,000 shortfall, does that include the sale of the property?
Did that include the sale of the property? I'm trying to remember when we first projected the...
The sale of the property was originally projected, I believe, in that number.
Okay. So then if we don't sell property, doesn't that $800,000 go up? Is that what... That's my question.
Well,
yes.
Okay. All right. Now, I know you talked about we're looking at perhaps the revising the business tax.
Mm-hmm.
And... I would like us to also consider going back to, I know you talked about consolidation in the city hall here. I think we need to relook at consolidation of our dispatch and police very seriously. And I'm wondering if anyone else here is agreeable to look into that again.
I believe that is something that is slated to be considered. So it's not on tonight's agenda, but I know that there have been discussions. As you know, we've consolidated fire with the Rio Grande and Oceano, and we will have additional discussions regarding police services and dispatch as well.
Okay, thank you.
So that will be coming future?
Yes, I believe that there will be some discussion of that in the future,
okay.
In the very near future. So any other questions?
No.
Okay.
Would you like me to proceed? Oh, Mr. Mayor, would you have questions?
Well, actually, I just would like you to I want to make sure that people understand the use of reserve funds, the city policies. I don't want us to be very cavalierly saying that we use reserve funds because it has typically not been our practice. We've tried to stay away from that and try to do for one-time expenses, and so the economy is bad and getting worse, so... Can you just kind of
actually, I will
that.
Try and just rather than reading them, I'll try and go over them. The funds are actually restricted into three different categories. One is, if I remember, it's an emergency, and that's to take into account any kind of emergency the city might encounter. What am I talking about? Weather-related emergencies, equipment failures, things of a fairly significant nature. The other component, which I believe is roughly equal to, 1% of the, well, it's 1 year's, we've never been able to achieve it.
It's equivalent to 1 year of the highest revenue source.
That's the goal.
Is the goal.
So right now we have $1.6 million worth of reserves. It's essentially important that they be maintained for those potentially critical expenditures that may be unforeseen. It's also important to note that $1.6 million, as I'm sure I need not tell you, is not a significant or very deep reserve. and it doesn't take very long before you're able to work your way through that, and then essentially you end up without a safety net, and certainly it isn't something that staff would ever recommend.
Okay. So did you want to finish your
report? Yeah, I'd like to go along. I will summarize the rest of the report. There are three or four different sections, and then take questions on those. The water fund. The water fund is the next in front of you. It actually has revenues at $2,825,661 and budgeted expenditures of $3,051,847. At the time that the budget was approved, we recognized that there was obviously a shortfall. I think the hope was, and still is that the redevelopment or the improvement agency will survive, and $900,000 will come back to the water fund, a portion of which could be used to replenish the capital program. We're only talking about $150,000 that would eliminate $150,000 of that type of expenditure in this year. We won't know until the 15th of January whether that happens or not. As of September 30th, on an operational basis, our water sales are still down. They amounted to supplies and services are all trending down as well, although not sufficient to meet the revenue reduction. Additionally, staff was informed that the FY11 costs for the operation of Lake Lopez were approximately $300,000 underspent. So that means that there will be a $45,000 benefit to the operational budget that we will see in January. Yet, on the other side, the city has experienced some unexpected costs associated with the water fund. These include the repair of the city's well system, which has been estimated at $60,000 thus far. And I don't have a final figure in on the repairs that were done up on Atlantic and 16th Street, but those were extensive. We ended up having to replace something like three or four valves. It was more than just the break in the main line. The reason I'm pointing that out is part of the problem that we're having is that we aren't maintaining a general reserve in the water fund and think that there is a need to reestablish that. When we did the budget in last year, we indicated that rate adjustments may be necessary on an annual basis to try and avoid what we had occur last time. Staff is thinking that we will probably need to proceed with rate adjustments sometimes after the first in the year, and the actual amount will depend on factors that need to be further analyzed. We want to wait and see a little bit longer what the water sale trend does. You know, maybe we're going to be lucky and that second quarter will have brought those sales up, but we'll have to wait and see. And then it'll give us another opportunity to look at operational costs and make a final determination on what kind of adjustment we'll need to go. But we won't want to wait until the mid-year report, because that'll be clear off in February before we move forward with a recommendation on an adjustment. The wastewater fund is doing in good shape. I'm pleased to report no significant increases or decreases have expenditures. Staff is going to suggest that in the near future the council review a couple of options. One might be to combine the two funds into a single fund. Some cities operate it that way simply because you're under the control of both functions are under the control of the same permitting agency. That's the Regional Water Quality Board. And you're issued the same kind of a it's called an NPDES permit for the operation of both systems. So there may be some benefit to combining those funds. If it's left separately, we would have to find an independent source to fund it. Improvement agency areas 1 and 2, as you know, there's been very little expenditures for the Grover Beach Improvement Agency. This has been due to the current litigation that we're all aware of. We expect that litigation to be resolved by January 15th. We're not precluded from receiving revenue, although we haven't got it yet because it's also tied with the property tax. So we'll get the first agency actual revenue sometime this month. That brings me to the Building and Planning Fund. The Building and Planning Fund was established several years ago. Its purpose was to segregate costs of development from the general fund and to support those costs with a self-sustaining fee program. Typically, this type of fee works well when fees are set at appropriate levels and there is sufficient development activity to cover the related operational costs. Initially, Grover Beach fee system, when it was initially set up in 2005 and 2007, were not sufficient to cover those costs in the initial year of operation, even in a time when the development activity was high. So development activity has fallen off. Doesn't mean that the fees change, but obviously we're incurring costs associated with the processing. I should mention a current development. Advanced development is still largely funded out of the general fund. And staff is going to likely recommend that at the end of this fiscal year, the council consider recombining this fund. Extensive than that, it is permit fees. There are things that we're required to do by the permit. That includes making sure our drains are cleaned, our storm drains are cleaned and rehabilitated on a regular basis. That's a lot of that cost. But those costs are going to largely also, we're going to see an increase in those costs in the future. We've talked about them in the past. They're requiring that agencies take on other roles, educational roles with the general public in terms of making improving stormwater quality, and all of that is a part of that $53,000.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Councilmember Peterson?
I know we talked about a long-term plan to increase revenues, and there are a couple of things that we've been able to do in the short term. We've been able to attract quite a lot of grant income. Are you able to quantify that at all?
Not off right off the top of my head. Most of the grant revenue, there's really been two areas. One is transportation-related funding. That's where we've gotten most of our grant assistance. And that's where we've been able to do most of our major street work over the last couple of years. The other is the Community Development Block Grant, which we received an annual allocation for. Now, one opportunity that will present itself is because the council's elected to be independent of the rest of the county. We will be able to compete more directly on the state level for larger community development block grants in the future. The other areas that we've received grant funding for, in addition to those two, is primarily safety-related grants that you've seen some examples of lately, the home security grants, communication grants, and the COPS grants are all a part of our regular budget.
And then the other question is, you know, the biggest long-term plan we've had has been the Beachfront Lodge. And I'm wondering if you can give us any indication of where we are with that and if you have any projections as to how that would affect the general fund.
Review of that revision. I'm expecting and hoping that it'll be back before the council next month for its final review. Once that's done, it'll go to the Coastal Commission, where it'll take, you know, 6 to 9 months if we're lucky in terms of the processing. Construction will follow after that. They figure at least 18 months on the construction. How much will that benefit us? To a certain degree, it still remains a bit unclear. I ultimately think that the benefit of that project will be the revitalization of the downtown. We will receive some direct benefits, dollar benefits, but realistically, I think having the lodge located where it is will help spur the redevelopment of the downtown. That's part of the reason that we did the West Grand Avenue enhancement project, was to be able to prepare that whole area and help to initiate private investment. And ultimately, that's where I think the benefit to the general fund will come, is through an overall increase in property tax revenue.
Thank you.
Okay. If there are no other questions, I think this is just a receive and file,
right?
Correct? Okay. What I'm going to do is, since we're here on the joint, looks like there's only one other item before we, and then I can adjourn this joint meeting. Let's do item CCIA1. This is affirming the city and the improvement agency's investment policies. So, Ms. Chapman, looks like you're on.
It's actually on the consent agenda.
It is consent.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good.
There
yes.
we go.
Okay, so, then we can do this really easily.
I'll move for staff's recommendation.
So, okay, let me back up.
Can I do that?
So, basically, we're going to take the first one is the Improvement Agency Consent Agenda. That's item IA1. This is the minutes of several meetings. There's a joint City Council meeting Improvement Agency meeting for September 19, 2011. And there's also minutes from October 17, 2011 policy. So this is the consent item as well.
I move that we accept the Joint City Council Improvement Agency Consent Agenda, item CC1A1.
I'll second that as well.
Okay, City Attorney.
Thank you. Honorable Chair, Mayor, Council members, and board members, I would recommend that, again, also on consent, each resolution is acted on separately, one by Council, one by the Board.
Okay, so I think Councilmember Monar made a motion, so let's make her motion. Let's split it in two. Is that okay with the second?
Yes.
The first one will be for the City Council. So,
Yes.
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 Yes, and then the second is the Improvement Agency.
I move that we accept the Improvement Agency Consent Agenda, item CC1A1.
I'll second that.
Very good. There's a motion. There's a second. Any additional discussion? Seeing none, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. And I think with that, we are complete on the City Council Improvement Agency joint meeting. I'm going to adjourn that, and I'm going to reconvene the regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council. And we are going to go into a regular business. This is item number 3. On the agenda, and I want to make sure that we are clear in what is before us this evening, and City Manager, maybe you can help out in your staff report. So the item before us this evening is not a final decision on what properties to sell or what that value is.
This particular item is simply initiating a process. The process is specific to 920 Brighton. But what we're simply asking for at this point is the council authority to move forward with the general plan amendment and the rezoning of that property.
Okay. So with that, did you want to give more on your staff report? And
sure.
City attorney, did you have something to add?
Simply thank you, Honorable Mayor and council members. And that process is basically irrespective of the future disposition of this property. It is a piece of property that's zoned consistent, as the staff report will reveal. It's zoned inconsistent with the surrounding properties based on a specific plan that was adopted a while ago. And staff is simply coming before you for your direction in moving forward with basically a cleanup, a general plan amendment, and a rezone on that piece.
Very good. City manager.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, as been indicated, staff is seeking direction relative to 920 Brighton. I want to be clear that we're initiating a process that may, in fact, lead to the ultimate sale of the property, but it's not an irretractable decision at this point. There are a lot of reasons to consider this particular piece of property, and those are basically outlined in the report. Staff has noted that this property was actually purchased by the city in 1978. At that time, its intended purpose was to become a part of the park. Obviously, the property is surrounded by residential property, and staff no longer considers that a feasible development for this particular piece. Garden consists the current use is a public facility use, and the actual use is, as we all know, is a community garden. Consists of 18 plots that are rented out to 10 individuals, and there is a waiting list of as well. Six of the tenants are residents and four live out the city. Staff initially has listed this property as being of primary interest in terms of sale because of its location and because it's developability and the fact that the gardens that currently exist on site could be relocated. It is important to note that, as I've said before, this is a long process. And to begin with, whether the council ultimately makes a decision to sell this property, staff would still be recommending the zone change. Because the zone change would ultimately put it in line with what's along South Brighton. And that would set the property up for its highest and best use, which is considered residential. Whether or not the council determines at a later date to actually sell it. The process will start here. It will end up going to the Planning Commission, at which time there'll be a hearing on the matter. Then it would ultimately come back. The zoning and general plan amendment would actually come back to the council. Once that zoning and general plan amendment is completed, then the council will have an opportunity to consider whether it wants to move forward with the sale of the property. And at that time, it would end up having to be declared surplus, offered to other public agencies in terms of potential sale or use. And then the council, when we finally get to the bottom line, the council would have the decision to place the property on the market for a given price. Obviously, this is going to take some time to do. And there will be lots of opportunities for people to express opinions one way or another.
Okay. So let's have questions for staff.
I've got some.
Okay. Councilmember Modar and then Councilmember Peterson.
I have a question. If the zoning change goes through,
mm-hmm.
and currently it's being used as a garden, would that be a violation of what would be allowed in that zoning?
No. I'll defer to the city attorney. It would be considered a non-conforming use, I believe.
The zoning would not affect the current use. So.
Okay. Also, I'm just curious. Maybe Ms. Chapman should have been here to... I don't know, not having done much accounting for corporations, mostly sole proprietors, I am curious, is the city liable for capital gains?
Not that I'm aware of.
No?
No, government agencies don't pay.
Okay. Because government agencies don't have to do that then. Okay. All right, thank you.
Councilmember Peterson.
Could you elaborate a little bit on why staff don't consider a park feasible at this point? What's the kind of historic background of the properties?
Well, again,
side?
I think way back in 1978, and we've taken some time to look at the record, it was considered that all of that area or all of those pieces of property would eventually come into the park. And I believe Mr. Clark was trying to assist in getting as many of those properties in position to become a part of the park. Well, obviously, the two pieces immediately to the left and the right either never became available or were not acquired. And they have current residential uses. This council has indicated the only opportunity to incorporate them would be through either an eminent domain procedure or some sort of acquisition procedure at a later date should those properties become available. I just don't think that there's any feasibility to that anytime in the near future. So essentially what this will end up being is a stranded piece of parcel away and separate from the park per se.
Thank you.
Any questions? Am I right? Oh, Councilmember Bright.
Just one. Well, actually a comment. I want to thank you very much for the new information that is extremely helpful to make so we can make an informed decision. So then, at this point in time, we don't want to talk about appraised value and that sort of thing. That's just really a moot point.
Right.
And we're talking about something that we'll definitely need to talk about later, but
right.
not for this zone change.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
That's correct. So, Bob, you had talked about a process. You and I think the city attorney talked about this process. So should the council give the direction to initiate this process, what's the time frame for that to happen?
Well, first of all, I'm going to have the city attorney again go over for you to make sure I haven't missed any of the steps. No?
No. I think the timing is that once direction is received from the council, this item will go to the Planning Commission for a determination of general plan consistency and for initiation or recommendation to the City Council. Assuming that is accomplished, and I'm here outside of my scope, but the Community Development Director will correct me if I'm speaking out of turn. But I think if that, for example, takes place in the February meeting of the Planning Commission, then this item would be back before you with their action, whether that's a recommendation or not, in beginning of March.
Okay, and that would include some level of environmental review.
Environmental
right?
would have to go first.
Okay. Okay. And then would the City Council be making a recommendation on whether on the issue of surplus property?
Well, technically speaking, when you deal with real property, the surplus issue is not a mandate.
Okay.
And there is a requirement that we have a property inventory, but as far as the specific legal requirements, declaration of surplus is not a requirement for real property.
Okay. And then, Bob, could you just further clarify this list of city properties that was attached to the staff report? I think
it may have
confused some people.
That was simply to list all the properties that we have available. And I've basically returned that with each time we've dealt with any kind of a property issue. It's just general information. We are not making any recommendations regarding any other pieces of property at this time.
Okay, very good.
I just have another question. Is that okay?
Yeah, you have another question? Go ahead.
If you're done.
Yeah, I'm done. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Why is it that we decided that this was the time to look at the zoning change? I mean, because I know there are other properties or other on other streets that really need to be reviewed that I think are much more important. So I'm just curious about that.
Well, it is because, as I've indicated, it is a potential property for sale by the council. And in order to, if that is going to remain a possible contributor to the general fund, it needs to be completed by the end of the fiscal year. The council, if we don't start that now with this initial procedure, then that won't happen. And so that's why it's coming before the council now.
Then are there any other properties on that list that could require zoning change also so that they would be of benefit to sell?
I have not looked at it in that level of detail.
Well, I would say as this process goes forward, you were talking about filtering this list,
right?
Because there are certainly properties in there that are still needed for core city services. So if there are others on here that are not and that are maybe there is potential, I think that that's a possibility, but I don't think you can say for sure right now.
Mr. Mayor, the other thing I'd like to point out, when we had prior direction, it was relative to at least three pieces of property. One of the other ones is the one that Mr. Okui owns, and I've discussed that briefly in this report. The other was the Cleaver Park property, but right now it does not appear as that it lends itself for consideration of moving forward with any kind of a sale. So that's why the focus is what it is currently.
Okay. So let me open. This is a regular business item, but I know there are lots of people who would like to comment on this. I have, looks like, five speaker slips, so I'm going to open this up to the public. And the first person is Judy Tennant Schwarm, and she'll be followed by Linda, is it Voth?
Good evening. I'm here to speak this evening on the property at 920 Brighton, but I would like to make one comment first about the redevelopment. I would like you to really think about, you talked about changing the fee. Well, first, I am not in retail business whatsoever in the area. But you talked about changing the possibility of changing a flat fee to a percentage of the gross. Anybody that's been in business knows there's a major difference between gross and net. And on Grand Avenue, there isn't a single block that doesn't have two or three empty buildings. I think we need to do everything we can to attract merchants, not make it any harder for them. And now, on the 920 Brighton, we talk about opportunities and things in the future. What I don't want us to see us do is be the farmer that grinds all of his corn seed and doesn't save the kernels to plant for next year. We're going to need parks and areas for decades to come. I would like to see us maintain the quality of life for as long as we can. Thank you.
Thank you. I think Ms. Voth, Linda Voth, followed by Daryl Voth.
I'm Linda Voth, Grover Beach. And I believe the garden is a valuable community resource, and the city is justified and prudent to spend a small portion of its reserves in order to save the garden. I have a few comments about the staff report. The report states that the garden has only 10 individual plot renters. Actually, many renters involve spouses, family, and friends who all engage in the gardening activities. Produce from the garden is widely shared. The actual number of people involved is many more than 10. The city seems to not actively tried to promote the garden or restrict plot rentals to just one plot per renter. The staff report also states the garden has four renters who reside out of the city. The plot rentals could have been restricted to city residents. It must have been a city policy to rent to these non-residents. The policy has changed, and when I put my name on the waiting list a couple of months ago, there were 8 Grover Beach residents ahead of me. The staff report also says that the plots only bring the city a net income of about $300 a year. Actually, the fact that such a beneficial program, even at the low rental rates, can be provided to the public with no out-of-pocket expense to the city seems to be a positive situation to me. The report also says that the garden could be moved to other locations. I feel that the current location is excellent because it keeps open space near the park, and its use conforms carefully to the carefully executed Ramona-specific plan in that it provides for recreational, educational, and cultural needs of the community. It would be very expensive to relocate 18 garden plots because of soil preparation, plot division, irrigation needs, and fencing needs. The staff report says that the highest and best use of the property is infill residential. I believe that the public recreational use of the property is the most beneficial to the residents of the city. Once an amenity such as the garden is sold, replacing it becomes substantially more expensive than keeping it in the first place. The report also says that it is unlikely that the garden parcel will ever be added to the park. While this may be true, the garden is fully utilized and could provide expanded agricultural educational needs in the future. As our citizens are more often living in dense urban housing, it is important to maintain a connection to agriculture and food production. So I hope that you would consider these things. And I believe that this is about selling the garden. I don't think that you're really concerned about changing the zone on that property for no reason other than selling the property. And
I believe you
also intend to do it to the redevelopment agents.
Thank you, Mrs. Booth. Daryl Booth, followed by Michael Clark.
Honorable Mayor, Council Members, Daryl Voth, Grover Beach. I object to preparations for the sale of the community garden parcel because it upsets my wife. And I believe of the sale of the community garden would be a short-term budget fix with a long-term detriment to the quality of the Grover Beach community. Most people know that the mayor and council members face very difficult, emotionally laden issues concerning the city's budget and year-on-year budget shortfalls. Although savings have been made in the 2011-2012 budget year, and with due respect to Mr. Perrault's presentation this evening and the budget process that has been made, it's still disappointing that a majority of the council appears not to provide adequate leadership in dealing with the structural city budget problem, while instead being willing to annually sell off city-owned property to cover continuing budget shortfalls. Staff uses the fact that council has made prior sales of city property as one rationalization for doing so again. You appear stuck on a detrimental track of least resistance and unable or unwilling to figure a way off the track. How long do you intend to keep this up? You previously have been kicking this ultimate structural budget problem down the road and buying time with sales of city property to the improvement agency. And while doing that, what are you expecting will arise to save the city's budget problems? What's going to change? the budgetary landscape and save the day. The people of Grover Beach deserve to know whether or not the council has a plan to deal with its structural budget issues, and if so, what is the plan? I mean, do you expect the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center project to solve the city's revenue problems? If so, when might that occur? Can you keep selling properties until that ship comes in? Or is the plan simply that you will annually review the city property list and see what's left, and in the face of a budget shortfall, do whatever is necessary to sell a piece of property until the city has no saleable property left? Or is it that the city will continue to sell property until you can no longer conjure a plausible rationale by which existing property is characterized as someday being developed for low-income housing and therefore appropriately sold at what historically has been inflated prices to the improvement agency? If the proposed sale of the community garden is simply buying time so you can fight the continuing budget battle another day, my question is, why wait? I encourage the council to utilize cash reserves to deal with its current budget shortfall and then to realistically invite the community's participation. In drilling down on the budget, expenditure, and revenue problems until a long-term solution is gained and the city is no longer in a position to annually sell off its assets.
Thank you, Mr. Vu.
Okay, thank you.
Michael Clark, followed by Dory Stone.
Honorable Mayor and City Council members, my name is Michael Clark from up north in Atascadero. First, I'm conveying these comments on behalf of Eric Greening, who looks forward to seeing the mayor at SLOCOG, but unfortunately couldn't get here this evening. He had somewhere else he had to be. Only so many meetings he can get to. He says, quote, "I urge you not to sell this garden without more information. The staff report for this item lists numerous other properties, but does not include any evaluation of the feasibility or consequences of sale of any besides the garden. Lacking this, you do not have the grounds to conclude that selling the garden is the best course. You also have no assessment of how the garden helps you achieve the goals of your climate action plan, either through direct sequestration or reduction in food miles. And you have no way to quantify the work that has gone into the enrichment of the soil, nor, for that matter, of the community. Indeed, a question worth asking is whether there are other properties on the list that could accommodate expansion of the community garden and of the garden's mission." End quote from Eric. I agree with Eric's comment, and I support Linda. And I hope you seek an alternative means to balance the city's budget. However, if you have to rezone the property, if that is the decision that's made, I hope that you seek to develop another community garden project to demonstrate the value that you hold in that project for the community and having those vibrant green spaces.
Thank you, Michael. And tell Eric I said hello. Dory Stone, followed by Debbie Criswell.
Hi, my name is Dory, and I live in Atascadero. I realize the importance of a balanced budget and being able to support city programs and employees, and I'd be really happy to see that goal accomplished successfully. But I'm not convinced, based on available information, that the best solution is to sell this lot and close a community garden. I'd like to see a full evaluation of the various options that are available right now for balancing the city's budget, both by selling properties and by other means. I'm convinced that selling the lot where the garden now lies is only one option, and one that might come at a high cost, namely the loss of a resource that contributes to the health and vibrancy of the local community. In my experiences with gardens in other cities, I've seen the huge impact that they can have on people's lives, and this isn't always something that can be measured in dollars. Having a shared garden space in one's neighborhood, which is quite rare, can sometimes mean the difference between isolation and knowing one's neighbors, passivity versus getting involved in community affairs,
being sedentary versus being active outdoors, and the innumerable benefits of improved health and nutrition. Also, a community garden can become something of a home and a family for the people it brings together. A whole network of relationships can form, a sense of camaraderie and belonging among those who might otherwise not even interact. This is something that could be disrupted, perhaps even permanently, by closing a garden and attempting to relocate it elsewhere. While this site may be suitable for new affordable housing, I would suggest that it may already be, in one sense of the word, a home. Community gardens can also be excellent places for programs that support local youth leadership, education, and crime prevention, and this garden near the park could offer great opportunities for such programs. I know that I personally would not feel comfortable making this decision unless I had seen a full evaluation of all of the possible alternatives. So I would encourage you to take the time for this, because I fear that swift action towards rezoning for sale of the land, while it might seem easier and appear to solve one problem, could also destroy something priceless and beautiful here in Grover Beach. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tong. Debbie Criswell.
Hi, Debbie Criswell, 967 Brighton. I don't know if any of you have had the opportunity to live across the street from Ramona Park. That park doesn't go 10 minutes without somebody in that park. There's always somebody at the garden. I live directly adjacent to the property that is being discussed. And I look over there and just can't believe that there isn't a time that doesn't go by that somebody isn't parked in front of that garden or utilizing the park that you all take such excellent care of. I decided that if you're going to rezone that piece of property, why don't I rezone that, my property? I have the exact same size lot, but you know, it would cost me money, thousands of dollars, to amend my zoning to in R1 to R2 so that I could tear my house down and put a duplex up, because my house would be more valuable. You say that that property is worth $235,000 to $250,000. What's your net going to be out of that? I was curious, so I hired an appraiser, and as of today at 3 o'clock, I got my appraisal for my home at 967 Brighton. They used an extraction method to best suit arriving at the reasonable site value of the property, not my dwelling. Do you know how much my house, property only, not dwelling, is valued at as of today? I have an ocean view from my driveway. I have a complete 180 view of the Ramona Park and the garden. I don't have a two-story house next to me. I'm not up against a lot line that's 5 feet. I have a very nice, lovely home. The value as of today, paid by me to get my home appraised, was and of my lot, and of the opinion of site value, is $110,000. So if you go ahead and value that property at $235,000 or $250,000, well, I think that I would tear my home down, sell my and get rezoned, pay out the. I mean, what's your net going to be by the time you take all of these steps to get the home, the property, amend the general plan, complete a zoning change, amend the Ramona specific plan, which is a wonderful thing. What's it? What's your net going to be? $60,000 by the time you pay staff to research all of that. It's not worth it to go ahead and take all these steps to ruin a garden that everybody enjoys. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Criswell. Okay, that's the last speaker request form I have. I'm going to close this to the public, bring it back to the council. So, as we said earlier, this is staff is the item that's brought before us is they are seeking direction regarding the general plan amendment and zone change. This is not dealing with the value of this land or the sale of this property. So, let's have some discussion. Mayor Pro Tem, or do you want to go? Oh, if you're prepared, make a motion.
Okay. I will make a motion that we direct staff to proceed to initiate the process to amend the general plan, complete the zone change, and amend the Ramona specific plan as indicated in the report for the property at 920 Brighton Avenue.
Okay. There's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Discussion on the motion?
I have a question. Yeah. Okay. It's not on the motion. It's actually a question of staff. I don't know if it's appropriate.
I'll allow it. Go ahead.
There was a point that was brought up during public testimony regarding the cost of rezoning this property. Can you give us some kind of an idea of what we're looking at?
The estimate is about $5,000.
Total?
Total.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councilmember Peterson.
I did second it. I wanted to make a comment, though. I know it's not my desire to inconvenience a lot of people and stop any gardening activity, and so I think that's probably the view of the whole council, that we're very much in favor of gardens and public gardens and opportunities to even increase it, perhaps. So this is not an anti-garden decision on my behalf, and I think I probably speak for the council. None of us would want to be anti-garden.
I have a comment, please.
Okay.
Sorry we didn't get all these comments in before the motion. You know, I find it pretty ironic that about 6 months ago when the sale failed, there had been all kinds of discussions about putting in other community gardens, and I noticed that none have been put in. So I kind of feel bad that we made those comments and we never did anything about it. So what makes it possible or real that we're going to follow through and put in a different community garden for everyone?
I think the really critical thing on that is that, as someone suggested in the public speaking session, is really important that we have input from people as to where we would do another one, what's the best location. So I think we need a lot of input from the public on that.
Yes, but I don't that think we never occurred. That never occurred during that 6 month period in which we made this suggestion that we would add other community gardens. Nothing was ever done, or it was never brought forward to have it done. It was like those were only, in my opinion, for myself, it sounded like empty promises if the sale had gone through. And since the sale didn't go through, I noticed even the temporary garden with the bricks, that sure disappeared real quick. So I really feel very strongly about what kind of commitments we make and what kind of quasi-promises.
Well, let's be careful, because there was discussion about it, and I think the council majority has said that is a value that we all have. And so in order for us to decide where these gardens go, it has to be a public hearing. So we have not done that. So I'm trying not to get into that discussion because the item before us. However, I think there has been discussion that says there are other opportunities, and there are opportunities to do this in Ramona Garden Park and 16th Street Park and Grover Heights, even at Cleaver property and 7th and Long Branch. So from my perspective, it is not an either or. We are trying, and we have been elected by people in this entire community to try and address all of this community's needs, which is funding of police and fire and funding of streets. It breaks my heart to think that the general fund, just 2 short years ago, we were spending over $700,000 on the streets, and now we're at $120,000. And I just got approached by several people this weekend who have said, fix the streets, you've lost the priorities. So it's a delicate balance that we're trying to strike here, and it breaks my heart to say we're having to consider selling this community garden, but we do believe there are alternatives out there, and if we move forward, I believe there is a commitment to do something, and it's really hard to do that when we keep getting caught on technicalities, and so I'm hoping that it's still a value for all of us as we move forward, or at least a majority of us as we move forward.
May I make one more comment?
Yes.
Okay. I I intend to support this motion. However, if it's not if it's not economically feasible, or it's not a good, I don't consider it to be a good financial move for our city, then that's something else we're going to consider down the road. Right now, though, I think we do need to get the zone changed in the event that that is the way we have to go. I hope it's not. I believe that we need to at least take this step. It could be continue to be a garden for who knows how long, or may not. We just don't know at this point in time. Appraisals are going to be important. All of that discussion is going to be very important. Community input is going to be very important. But at this point in time, I am willing to support the zone change.
Okay. If there's no additional discussion, there is a motion on the floor, and I guess this is a voice vote. And Donna, do you have the motion correctly? Okay. Can you? Okay. So all in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. The motion carries 4-1. And so, staff, I think you'll come back and give us a better idea of the schedule as you're initiating this process. Okay, let's move on to item number 4, and this is our Air Pollution Control District Grant Amendment Agreement. And I believe this staff report is by Public Works Director and City Engineer Greg Ray.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. Tonight's agenda item is approval of an air pollution control district grant agreement and a resolution authorizing enrollment in the APCD Voluntary Emission Reduction Program. Some brief background. In 2005, the San Luis Obispo County Air Pollution Control District awarded a $10,000 grant to the city, to the Public Works Department, for the purchase of an alternative fuel vehicle. Until recently, unfortunately, the city's been unable to use those funds. Then earlier this year, with the help of county APCD staff and the Central Coast Clean Cities Coalition, an all-electric truck was donated to the city and is now currently being used by the Public Works Department, as well as for special events and some weekend cleanup programs. The city originally accepted the donation with the understanding the vehicle donation with the understanding that the $10,000 grant would be returned to the APCD. But however, with assistance from county APCD staff, we are now going to be able to use the $10,000 grant to install a electric vehicle filling station here at City Hall. So I want to point out that the staff report mentions some dissimilarities between the proposed use of the $10,000 grant and the language in the body of the agreement. The original agreement talks about a heavy-duty diesel engine emission reduction projects. And so originally these grants, which came out of a ConocoPhillips resolution with regard to some emission issues out at the Conoco plant, originally these grants were to purchase replacement engines and emission reductions in diesel engines. And so the grant language remains the same. However, the county APCD staff has been willing to alter the reporting requirements and the attachments to the agreement such that they fit with the electric vehicle filling station that is being proposed. So it's a fairly simple item, I think. We're basically recommending that the council adopt a resolution authorizing participation in the program and approve the grant agreement and to authorize the mayor to execute an agreement on behalf of the city. And that essentially is my report.
Thank you, Greg. Any questions of staff? Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
In the third paragraph, you mentioned the last sentence. Although this is somewhat unusual, staff believes the benefits outweigh the risk associated with accepting this grant. Could you elaborate on what are the benefits and what are the risks?
So the benefit would be, first of all, the electric vehicle filling station. We have an electric vehicle. We have an opportunity to fill it here at City Hall as a result of the filling station, but we can also make that filling station available to the public. So I think there's a service to the public we can perform. In addition to that, in order to construct the electric vehicle filling station, we'll also be required to put in a meter pedestal and an electric distribution panel outside in the parking lot. As a result of doing that, that also provides us an opportunity to provide power for the City Hall landscape system for the irrigation clock, and to provide some exterior outlets for city events, lighting and other events that could happen at City Hall. So there's some minor benefits, ancillary benefits associated with this also. In regard to risks, I think personally the risks are fairly minor, although if you look at the body of the grant agreement, it isn't a precise fit to what we're using the funds for. With the APCD's changes to the attachments to the agreement, I believe the reporting requirements, we can meet those requirements. So the risks are very minor.
Oh, okay. That you say that the risks are very minimal. What risk? What would they do?
The risk of not meeting the reporting requirements, or the risk of not meeting the performance requirements. If you look through the attachments, essentially we have some energy offsets that we need to meet ultimately. But the time period to do that can be extended indefinitely until we meet the offsets. So it's a matter of offsetting emissions that would have come from heavy-duty vehicle usage by charging electric vehicles. And I think in working with APCD staff, they've really been over backwards to make this to make it doable for us.
And Honorable Mayor and Council Member,
yes.
Mayor Pro Tem, the risk is the $10,000 that they're giving to us. We would have to return it if we didn't meet the requirements.
Okay, thank you. The other question I have is, you indicate putting it in the lot out here.
Yes.
And that scares me. That lot has so many areas in it that people could conceivably trip and fall. The more people we invite into that lot, the more exposure we have as to the city's liability for potential claims and injuries resulting from that.
I appreciate that, and we're actually proposing the lot to the north of City Hall, the north side here. So,
putting the charger over
there. Yes.
Where?
Yeah, slightly better condition.
What location? Where?
Roughly
Which
in the middle.
Stall? In the middle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you given any consideration to putting the charging station over at Ramona Park as a more convenient location for other people to use it?
No. One other option that we did talk about briefly was to install the charging station at the train station.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge that we have with putting it somewhere other than City Hall is that there is this reporting requirement for usage on it, and the most obvious way that we can see to meet the reporting requirement is by having direct control over it, and that is, it wouldn't just be available for anybody to pull up and plug into. There'd be a sign saying, you know, please come inside and we'll gladly assist you with charging your vehicle. So we could unlock it, and then we could document the usage and record that. Having it elsewhere, we'd either have to do the same thing, either have some way of going to the site, unlocking it, and making it available for people, or we would have difficulty in recording how many people use it. We'd be limited to just measuring the electricity.
Wouldn't this equipment automatically record the amount of time that it's used for charging?
It records electrical use, yes. But
Which
that's
is
it.
What
we
you...
want to record number of users also. And we would like to have, I believe, some control over that. I'm not sure you want to provide electrical power for just about any use. I mean, I think you want to have some ability to kind of monitor that.
Getting back to the risk, if we have the city vehicle and possibly, let's say, just to be ridiculous, two other people within the city that use it once in a while. Now, is that reporting going to reflect the very small amount of use that that station gets, and therefore APCD is going to be criticized for this $10,000 grant that they were very questionable that it was being used for the right thing to start with? And is that not one of the ways that they could say, sorry, folks, you're not using it the way it should be. You used the $10,000, I wouldn't say fraudulently, but it was misused, and therefore we'd like you to pay it back.
You know, it's the
answer is no.
Question,
but yeah, so long as the city meets the reporting requirements, the usage that is reflected in the reporting could not be a reason for the grant being.
Well, is that right?
Taken, yeah.
So it doesn't matter if we have just a city vehicle, only vehicle that ever gets charged on it, we're okay.
As long as we report.
And we report that.
And we report, right.
Okay.
We're not responsible for how many people use it. We're just responsible for accurate reporting of how it's used.
That's a really good question, though, because I had the same one. Because APCD would... Okay. You're
the only reason I ask that is, having read this document, I got the impression that they're really stretching things. It kind of scares me. I don't know. Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Monar and then Peterson.
Do we have an idea of the $10,000 that will cover the cost of the purchase of the equipment and what improvements we need to do here to accommodate it?
Yes.
Okay. Currently, the vehicles being our electric vehicle, how is it being charged now?
We have the ability to plug it in at the corporate yard.
Can you tell me, do you know what the cost has been?
Honestly, I don't.
Okay. If this charging station is available to public use, then we will be incurring additional costs in electricity then.
Indeed.
Is there anything that will offset that? Because we already have a general fund problem. Let's just increase our electric use. I'm facetious here, but is any part of this grant, it's just covering the installations, it's not covering any of the costs of the use of electricity?
It's just the installation.
Just the installation, okay. So that the part about how much we're using that has not really been looked at?
That's correct.
Okay. So you don't know how much it costs per watt or whatever it is that's in the electric vehicle, right?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't know in terms of the, other than the truck, which I could easily get information on, I don't know a lot about the current, like a Toyota Prius, how much power it takes to charge one and how much time that would take. I mean, I can foresee, we have a couple of city-owned cars, actually, that are dual fuel, like a Prius, where they have a gas engine and an electrical option.
Hybrid.
Hybrid, there you go. I'm sorry, I was looking for that word. And so there's a potential a couple staff members would use that as a ability to extend their range somewhat and possibly get more use out of that vehicle. It's unlikely the public is going to pull up and charge all day on that. I would think that if they have things to do, that would be a short-term option for them. So I don't really have an estimate. It would be really nearly impossible to estimate how popular it's going to be and how much usage it's going to get. But I think as we would move on in the future, if it became a problem for the budget, we'd have to reevaluate that.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Peterson.
Councilmember Molnar asked one of my questions, which is there a charge for using the filling station? Obviously, I wouldn't want to be looking at a charge for city vehicles, but if the public are using it, it means we can't. And so there's that question. And then also, have we looked into using solar power? Because then it's free once we get the installation in. So if we could get solar, if we can have solar generating of the power, I don't know if that's an option, but it might be something worth considering.
I think it's a great idea. I'm not sure that the technology is there to provide, at least cost-effectively right now, to provide that amount of power. You're talking about a fairly high wattage output. So I'm not sure the cost and benefit would pencil. And with regard to your other question, I think if council has an interest in charging for that, we could certainly look into it and see if that's an option.
I believe that, first of all, the agreement is for a term of 3 years, and then the city would retain the ownership of the equipment without the reporting obligation. I think during that duration of that time, I think it would be a violation of the agreement for the city to charge. I think we are obligated to make it available to the public at no charge.
Yeah, we are. Did you have any more questions?
No.
So, yeah, so I'm just...
Did you read it for 3 years? I don't remember reading that part. I read this whole thing. Unless I just...
The reporting period is three years.
Oh, but we get to... Oh, because you made it sound like we return the equipment after 3 years.
We retain.
Okay.
Oh,
well, can we both
hear
the same
wrong
thing? Yeah.
Okay. So I guess there's been some great questions. I think you guys have all asked my questions, and that's good. So I just am looking for that assurance that what has been negotiated with the APCD staff is going to be constant, because what I really would hate to do is us enter into an agreement and they say, oh, you've only had one car or two cars charging, and that's not going to help us reduce our air emissions or our greenhouse gas emissions. So I'm looking for some assurances that they won't come back and make those kind of requests or demands on us.
Well, you know, beyond the language in the agreement, I'm not sure what their opportunity to do that would be. I mean, if they feel comfortable changing the language to fit the charging station as they've done, I suspect that's sufficient.
Okay.
But, maybe the city attorney would want to comment on that.
And city attorney, is there an out clause in here? Let's say the council chooses to move forward with this agreement, and then staff talks to, because I know there's other organizations out there that are actually probably doing charging stations, and that should we move forward with this, there's got to be a lot more discussion about not just installation, but its operation, because I could easily see someone when we'd want people to be plugging in when it's not peak hour demand and rates would not be as high.
Between the hours of midnight and
but then we need a staff member here.
So.
Okay.
I would agree there's a number of options available. Certainly if council would like to direct us staff to look into some operational options or even possibly to reconsider the location, we could do that. We're pretty much trying to keep it simple. Just install it. Let's see how it goes and see if it at least at a minimum provides a benefit to the city for the city vehicle and maybe a couple of employee vehicles.
Yeah, because I guess if you would say we're going to have a couple of vehicles that are electric, we're not paying a cost for gasoline. So I guess there could be a direct
Indeed.
Savings.
I believe that was the impetus behind providing the electric truck, is that it does in fact provide a direct offset for some other vehicle.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Wow, you'd think this would be an easy one.
Okay. It will plug in at the end of the day, which will be mm-hmm. after peak time anyway.
Yeah, I would say so. Absolutely. Okay, this is a regular business item. Does anyone from the public want to address this item? Seeing none, I'll come back to the council.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
That we adopt the resolution authorizing participation in the program, approve the grant agreement, and authorize the mayor to execute the agreement on behalf of the city of Grover Beach.
I second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
I just wanted to publicly say how much we appreciate the Public Works guys for working to come up with this and to find it in the first place and then find a way to make it work at no cost so far to the city. So great job, and they're doing what staff have been doing for the last few years, is finding ways to continue to be financially creative, and it's very much appreciated by the council.
Yeah, and I think there are other options out there regarding operational and other costs, because I know that there's a couple of groups, and I'd be more than happy to provide you guys with some information that would help offset some of city costs. Okay. So there's...
So briefly, the fugitive dust rule passed with a 7-4 vote. I took the council concerns and discussed some that had not already been discussed, but briefly, the concerns that I took away from this council was that the APCD worked collaboratively with state parks and the county. The board placed a great deal of emphasis on that issue, and staff assured the board that they will continue to work together with the state parks and county. Second was to revise the draft rule to eliminate assessing penalties or fees. As it turns out, the Health and Safety Code sets a base limit for penalties, and the APCD may increase but may not reduce the standard. The fees in the rule are the standard. Staff assured the board that penalties are not a tool they wish to use, and the board again elaborated that that is not a tool we wish to see them use. Final authority... third concern, the final authority for approving a PMRP rests with the APC board rather than the APCD officer. Well, in an effort to hold the health and safety of the citizens of California above political maneuverings, the Health and Safety Code has taken the approval of a plan of this nature, as well as the ability to assess a penalty, from the political body. It must be with the APCO as a non-political decision.
Oh.
There is a hearing board that is available to those who wish to appeal a penalty or ruling. This board, too, is non-political. Hmm. So the fees, waiving the fees, that sort of thing, it has been taken away from a political body. Fourth, that the final program is based on defensible scientific data. APCD Council adamantly believes that the rule is defensible and the APCD Board is well within the scope of their authority. State law has delegated legislative law-making power to the APCD Board, and as a quasi-legislative act, the courts will look to the regulator, and if the regulation is reasonably necessary to effectuate the statute and is not arbitrary, capricious, and or without reasonable or rational basis, they will not substitute their judgment over the APCD board. The last, as I understood it, was that this would become a federal rule and almost impossible to change. That absolutely is not true. Try to address those.
Very good, and I have to say, I think the only one I take exception to is that the APCD executive director is not a political body, but...
According to the Health and Safety Code, apparently he is not.
I understand.
So can I ask for some clarification on that? Does that therefore mean that elected officials don't make decisions? The decisions made by one guy, one body?
Well, the board, of course, has the APCO serves at the pleasure of the board. So if they're not fulfilling what the board requires of them, then they always have the ability to have someone else.
Okay. Thank you.
Good point.
I have a question then. Okay. Can you tell me who the four? What I'm sure it's record, but I didn't read about it. Who the four no votes were?
Let's see. Going down from that end. Meacham. Ed Waggy.
I knew he would be.
Roberta Fonzi.
And she's with
Atascadero.
Atascadero. Okay.
Oh, and
Hammond from Paso Robles.
Yeah, Hammond. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Meacham is North County, isn't he?
Meacham yes. is the county supervisor Superior. For the North County.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Part okay. of the North County, anyway.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else?
That was my only meeting. Thank you.
Okay. Phyllis.
I've had no meetings. I'll have Thursday.
Okay. Mr. Nichols.
Nope, they're all coming up this week.
Yeah.
Debbie.
No meetings, but the EVC did do their economic report, and I do actually have a PDF copy of it, an electronic copy, so if anybody would like to read that 108 pages, I'd be more than happy to email it to you.
I gleaned it.
You gleaned it? Wow. I read it.
Nice. Sure, I have plenty of time to read that. So let me just be real quick. The Central Council of Governments, the meeting is actually this Wednesday, and one of the beach for funding, and I believe the amount that is being considered is $908,000.
Oh, that's nice. Yes.
So that is part of the agenda tomorrow, in addition to a variety of other projects that are, for example, others are like the Bob Jones Bike and Pedestrian Trail in San Luis Obispo, the California Coastal Trail Cave Landing Segment, and then other Street Pismo, Shell Beach Road, Streetscape, and Multi-Use Trail as well. Those are all being considered under the Transportation Enhancement. And then it looks like, as far as the major projects go, Briscoe Road and Halcyon, the interchange, is being recommended as a new project at $5.6 million, and that's to match the 50% I think the city of Rio Grande has raised. So hopefully, if the board moves forward on these items, it goes to the California Transportation Commission, I believe, at the end of this month or the middle of this month, and if that it is approved, then we move forward to the next phase.
Of that 908 for all along Grand Avenue,
it's not all along.
No,
Grand.
Well, actually, it's the third phase, so it basically is an addition to the monies that
we already got for
let's say from second to fourth. And then I think there is another, I want to say about 900,000 or so for some stuff downtown between, let's say, 8th and 11th. Correct, Bob? So this would be another phase planned for fiscal year 13 to do improvements at the...
Oh, because what I was wondering is if that would then release other funds that would be available for other streets. You know, take some money off of Grand and then... put that towards our, you know, no?
Yeah, unfortunately, the program that they're recommending is restricted.
No, I know. I understand that's for Grand, but if we were going to be putting money in also towards Grand, then would that money then be available elsewhere since we have some
I would
in?
Say in a normal year, probably two or three years ago, that would have been a very good question. Oh. We would have considered that, but so Bob.
I was just going to answer that most of the work that we're doing on Grand Avenue is grant funded, so there
anyway.
Wouldn't be any to actually free up and return. That's the basic problem.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and I think the downside is obviously we talked about the street fund, the budget being minimal.
Okay.
Yeah, tough times, unfortunately. But I think that's good news for at least... for us as we try and...
Police Department. I took a look at the news release that we got back on November the 23rd. It was the incident that occurred in the 900 block of North 4th Street. And it was a stolen vehicle that was stopped. And the activities that took place after that and the arrests that were made after that, again, I think it speaks so highly of how our police department works and the work that they do under the direction of Chief Jim Copsey. Mm-hmm. My congratulations to you and the entire force. Please convey that to them for me.
Very good.
That's it.
Any other communications?
One thing.
Yes.
I would just like to say how much I enjoyed the whole parade.
Oh, yeah.
And then the craft fair afterwards was just marvelous. I mean, you know, for a little town, I'm telling you, I was just so impressed, and I spent my budget and had to go home and get more money. But it was really great. It was, I thought it was just a really swell community activity. Mm-hmm. So I want to just...
Too bad it was so cold.
And, thank
wasn't
you.
That bad. I walked home and walked back, and I was pretty warm by then.
I watched the movie.
Oh, you did?
That would be cold, yeah.
I couldn't nice. Face it.
So, I mean, was it a pretty good turnout at the movie?
Oh, no.
Okay, never mind. Never mind. I did want to agree with you. I was going to say that I think the parade was fantastic. It was well attended, yeah. And I know that the booths and the craft fair was probably the largest as I've seen mm-hmm. Since I've been going. So
and so talented. Kudos. Oh, my earrings! I got these.
Oh, wow!
Handmade. they were going to be my daughter's, but here they are on my ears. So there you have
yeah,
it.
Yeah. No. So kudos to city staff and definitely I think the chamber and others that were involved in that. It was a really great event. Okay. Two other things that I did want to bring up under council communications, and the city of Arroyo continues to move forward on their diversity task force. And I know that the city manager has attended a couple of their meetings, and I have not attended any. And I had been approached by a resident of Grover Beach, I believe it's David Della Torre. And so David had expressed an interest in Grover Beach doing something around the issue of diversity and the idea.
Absolutely. I think that'd be really a cool deal.
Okay.
Lots of diverse food.
Absolutely.
I'm thinking like an ethnic fair, kind of,
Yeah, sort of get back to one of the original intents.
Oh, yeah,
of the
stone
soup.
Soup, which has mm-hmm. become kind of mm-hmm. commercial.
Yeah. Yes.
You know.
Greens.
Okay, so Karen, good. And then the last thing is, and I know with shrinking budgets and revenues that are being very competitive. I know that originally we had some funding through SLOCOG to consider the third phase of pedestrian improvements at 9th and Ramona. And I know that we originally had some discussion about what that looked like if we were to cul-de-sac the street and do some improvements on 9th. And I've dropped the ball on this, and I know that there have been a couple of members of the community. Richard Roberts comes to mind, Jeff Lee comes to mind, who mm-hmm. are willing to volunteer their time to be on a committee to discuss if that's feasible and what that might look like. So I will be getting in contact with them and seeing if there's still an interest, and then bringing back something officially to the council for your consideration. Okay? Mm-hmm. And that's all I have. City Manager, item number 5.
Actually, Mr. Mayor, before I relate the item regarding cancellation, I just wanted to make you aware that the Parks and Recreation, State Parks and Recreation Department, OHV Division, is going to be doing an economic impact study. The review of that is going to take place Thursday at Ramona Park. There's two sessions, one at 9 in the morning, and the other one, I believe, is at 6 p.m.
At 6 p.m., yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and all council members, I distributed that letter to all of you today. Just wanted to bring that to your attention. The other is a recommendation, actually, for me to cancel the meeting of the 19th. Obviously, that's a holiday week. For the most part of that week, we will be closed. It's a furlough week, and frequently cities will cancel regular sessions at that time of year. I don't see anything that is pending that we need to deal with. The other issue that you need to be aware of is management staff is subject to the Fair Labor Standard Act during furlough weeks, which means if they query, the second is a holiday. It's the holiday we get for New Tuesday. Year's. So that the first meeting
Tuesday.
Would be Tuesday, January 3rd in that case. So the recommendation is to cancel the meeting on Monday, December 19th.
Okay, and then so we don't have any large items that we would need to have on an agenda. There's none ready for December, correct?
No, that's correct.
Okay.
I'll make a motion.
Let's cancel the whole week of December.
Okay, make a motion.
I'll make a motion that we cancel the meeting of Monday, December 19th, 2011.
I'll second that.
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Sorry. That was a
yawn,
right?
That was aye, right?
That was aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Okay, motion carries. There are some easy ones here tonight. City Attorney, you had to report your comments.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. Just a very briefly, Mayor Pro Tem, sitting as Mayor, requested that I review the tape of the APCD with regard to some potential language that came from the attorney that was advising, the board's attorney. And I reviewed that, and it was completely within the duties that he was performing. So there was no issue with that.
Very good. And looks like we have one closed session item tonight.
It is the intention of the City Council to meet with staff on one item, and that is property negotiations on a lease at the Hillcrest water tank site.
Very good. So we are going to recess into closed session.